From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from Monroe, Louisiana. State of Belief airs every weekend on radio stations nationwide and is available as a podcast on iTunes and other leading podcast platforms. I urge you to subscribe to it today. This program is made possible in great part by the generous support of our listeners. If you've made a donation this week, please let me say a very sincere thank you. If you haven't pitched in yet, information on how you can help keep this show on the air is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. So it's finally happened. After 2 years of concerted efforts to destabilize and disrupt a nation that was doing pretty well in terms of peace, prosperity, and progress, this administration and its boosters spent the first half of last week cringing at the president's latest attempt at domestic diplomacy.
You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay?
And the second half of last week, watching Americans terrorized by mail bombs targeting the president's named enemies. You know, decades ago, Nixon had an enemies list. Before that, McCarthy indulged his own paranoid fantasies of the nation's inside foes. But neither one of them, neither man, nor others like them, devoted so much of their time to relentlessly stoking fear and hate of their claimed enemies, nor benefited from such nonstop media coverage of those efforts. The technique has now been perfected. At least it seems that way. Any student of Steve Bannon would recognize it in a moment. Destabilize things to the point where all your darkest predictions seem to have come true.
The American dream is dead.
And then present yourself as the sole savior.
I alone can fix it.
Seeing any remaining voices of reason being frightened into submission is just an added bonus. Once again this week, my heart breaks for our nation. But yet again, we commit this weekend to highlighting the words and works that spring from what is best about America and its pluralistic, courageous spirit. That's why this is what's coming up this week on State of Belief Radio.
The Department of Health and Human Services is considering defining gender as, quote, a biological, immutable condition determined by genitalia at birth.
The New York Times this week reported on administration plans to grant the next wish on the political religious rights wish list, undoing any hard-won progress gained by transgender Americans in the past decade, and in invalidating their very existence by any means necessary. It is a sick perversion of religion, to be sure. And we now know it may soon be a sick perversion of the power of the federal government as well. On this week's show, we'll consider the wide-ranging damage this kind of toying with human lives is likely to do. But we'll also consider the progress society has made, which cannot be undone by any government policy. For all of this, I'm looking forward to welcoming America's only transgender nuclear-qualified Navy veteran, Rabbi Rona Matlow, back to State of Belief Radio.
Yes, there is a profound polarization between what we call the wings, the more extreme voices, the very strident voices of the right and of the left. But in fact, there's a very large group, a majority of Americans, who are in what we call the exhausted majority, who actually don't identify unambiguously with either of that side.
At a time where what divides us is getting so much attention, It was refreshing to learn of an international research-driven initiative titled More in Common. Scratching the surface of what seems like a hopelessly polarized nation, they found solidarity that may yet save us from what seems to be a dark and divided future. We'll get details from More in Common Research Director Stephen Hawkins. But first,
they're traveling cross-country. Nearly three dozen nuns across 21 states in 27 days. They charge that the fallout from the 2017 tax cuts is harmful for people.
The outcome of the 2016 election has come to be attributed to some complete failing on the part of Democrats to hear the forgotten middle of the country. While there may be some truth to that, progressive multi-faith voices have been raised in solidarity with the most underprivileged and marginalized among us since the birth of the Republic. And it's just as true today. The network lobby approaches justice and human rights from a Catholic perspective, and the Nuns on the Bus initiative, which has now become a tradition, deliberately travels the land to listen to the voices that are rarely heard, and then it delivers those messages to the powerful. Sister Simone Campbell is the executive director of the network lobby and is the original nun on the bus. Since October 8th, the Tax Justice Truth Tour has been making its way toward Mar-a-Lago, and I'm delighted to welcome her back to State of Belief Radio once again. It's always good to talk with you, Simone. Thanks for being with us again.
Well, it's great to be with you, Weldon. This has been an amazing trip, so happy to share.
Would you expand just a little bit on the theme for the current bus tour, the first one in 2 years?
Right. It is the first time we've been on the road in 2 years. We had to lobby last year in D.C., and we're on the road to say that this tax policy that was passed on strictly partisan lines without any public hearings, without any Democratic amendments being added, we're on the road to say it doesn't have to stay this way. It shifts the vast majority of the tax benefits to the top, and now they've got the plan, they have the agenda to cut programs that serve the working poor in our nation. Mm. And we're saying that's wrong. And quite frankly, all over the country, we're finding out people agree with us. We were just at this amazing women's housing trust or land trust program in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and they use tax benefits or tax credits to leverage low-income housing. But mm-hmm. what they're finding is that because of the tax bill with a lower tax rate, people are less interested in investing in these housing bonds. And people just don't see the ripple effect of everything that's being destroyed by this tax policy. But that was a new one for me. So we're on the road to say we're better than this. We can change it.
Sister Simone, I know you do a lot of talking on these trips, but I also know you do a great deal of listening. Would you share some highlights of what you've been hearing as you've crossed the country?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this morning at prayer, one of our sisters, it came to her, the song, Who Will Speak If We Don't? And yesterday we were up in New Jersey and heard from some refugees who had been released from detention talking about their horrid treatment in detention. Because when they entered the country with a valid visa, they weren't believed at the airport, and they were taken immediately in handcuffs and shackles to detention. One man was telling us for 7 months he was in detention and never saw the sun. He was then talking about the amazing outpouring of support from First Friends in New Jersey. Another woman told us that Aaron, we were up in Beaver, Pennsylvania, and I had never thought of this, but she has a severely disabled daughter, and we met Abby, her daughter, who doesn't speak or here, so she signs. And it was so powerful. But the piece that broke my heart was Aaron, the mom's fear that she and her husband will not outlive her daughter, and who will care for her daughter. Just the partisan rhetoric is enough to strike terror in their hearts. And that's wrong. Who are we as a nation that our partisanship strikes fear into parents so that they themselves begin to be traumatized by this partisan rhetoric? These people are contributing to our society, making us great, and we, for partisan reasons, are undermining them. It's wrong, Weldon. It's immoral.
What are the one or two unforgettable moments that's going to come from this time around?
Well, quite frankly, I'm really looking forward to Mar-a-Lago, where we're going to have a fiesta for the common good. Anybody that's in Florida or nearby, please come November 2nd. We're going to gather about 10 and do a drive-by of Mar-a-Lago with the bus, the end of our pilgrimage, and then come back to Trump Plaza and have a fiesta for the common good. We might see some stones crumble, but the idea is we'll inviting people to bring something to share, because isn't that democracy where everybody, you know, everybody contributes, everybody shares.
Mm-hmm.
One particular story that I think that stands out for me, early on in the trip, we were in Phoenix at this stunning site. It's called the Human Services Campus for Homeless Individuals. And it is 12 nonprofit organizations that are working together to end the scourge of homelessness. And the wraparound services, the collaboration among different agencies, the commitment to honor the dignity of each person was, I mean, it was just like a headlights in what is otherwise a kind of a dark, challenging time. And so their story of collaboration, doing cooperative fundraising, knowing that if they're in one location, the people can flourish. And even the county had three county workers there to help folks access needed services. So for me, that was like a tremendous good news story, that when you have adequate tax revenue and a commitment to work with all of your citizens, you can really make a difference.
My friend, I want to talk about this week. Events of this week could lead one to see the nation as more hopelessly divided than ever. The media keeps focusing on the most frightening and divisive stories, but is it really like that in the places where you've been on this traveling time?
Well, I have to say that we have encountered folks who are really depressed and distressed, and as a confession, I'll confess, it's a good religious activity, I actually woke up this morning quite worried about where our nation is going and the level of hurt and hate that seems to be so rampant. And then I thought, we were at Holy Redeemer Episcopal Church up in Morristown, New Jersey. We did a wonderful recording of a podcast talk tax policy to this big audience. But their motto that they've had for many years, I'm taken to heart. And it says, separate church and hate. That is what we need to do. All of us people of faith, all of us who care about the work of the divine among us, we've got to speak up and end this hate. And I know that hope is a communal virtue, and the only way to find it is if we're working together. Mm-hmm. As long as I stay hidden under the covers of my bed like I was this morning, it's easy to be depressed. But it's in community that we get lifted up. It's in community that we find hope. And it's in community that we can make change. Community makes a difference. And this is why November 6th is so important as a voting day, because we are the community of our nation claiming our democracy. And democracy, together, we can make the difference.
How would you answer the question, how is America?
My experience across, I mean, we started in Santa Monica, and we've crossed the whole country. The northernmost point was Utica, New York, and now we're headed down the eastern seaboard. But I think what I see are worried people. We've heard a lot about the worries about racism and the worries about division. I met this amazing, wonderful transgender person who sang at a rally that we did, and afterwards she grabbed me, held me, and burst into tears and saying, the administration is trying to erase us. I don't want to be erased. It's those kinds of really personal consequences for what's happening in our nation, and I worry that the media chases one big story after another, but never really focuses on the consequences left behind. And so I think that's why it's so important that we find each other, because if we find each other, the State of the Union will be strong. But right now, it's pretty weak. And I think fear and division is driving us apart. That's why I love the bus.
Mm-hmm.
100% are welcome to the bus. Everyone's welcome to the bus.
Well, Simone, you literally wrote the book on the kind of activism you practice. It's called A Nun on the Bus, How All of Us Can Create Hope, Change, and Community. And so I know you have thought long and hard about how to encourage others to get active. We've never needed that any more than we need it right now. Would you talk about how people of goodwill who desperately want to see change happen can step across that line and become change makers themselves?
Oh, this is the key moment for us as a nation. I mean, I am worried about our democracy, but, you know, in my Christian tradition, St. Paul in his letters writes about how we're one body and we each have a different part to play. And so what I'm really urging everybody to do is listen to the spirit within. I call it the wee small voice. You know, where you can act. And it's something so simple as talking to neighbors about voting, talking to kids and grandkids about voting, making sure people have what they need to vote and make a good decision. We ask all of our people to compare two candidates, you know, that are running against each other so that people can make a smart decision. We all know that negative ads drive people away from voting, and we've got to stop that. That's wrong. And so what we see is that if trusted messengers like your listeners even just share their perspective with neighbors, friends, folks in the grocery store, wherever they are, they're doing their part. Now, my role in the body of Christ right now is to be stomach acid, I think, in the body of Christ. And it's all about stirring up energy, breaking down food to parts that can be used by others. But if it's just me being stomach acid and nothing happens with it, then that's kind of toxic. So I rely on everybody else to pick it up and do their part. And this time in our nation, everybody needs to be involved. This is a time for the 100%. Whether we agree or disagree politically, actually, part of me doesn't really care about that, though I'd like you to agree with my tax policy. But the fact is to be engaged, to care about the 100% and make our nation a more perfect union. End the unpatriotic lie that we're based in individualism. That's an unpatriotic lie. The Constitution tells us what our aspiration is. It's we the people. We the people making a more perfect union. That's what we need to do.
Sister Simone Campbell is the executive director of the network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice. The nuns are back on the bus this month, crossing the country with their Tax Justice Truth Tour. You can follow along and support the sisters at nunsonthebus.org. Simone, safe travels to you. Be careful when you get down in Florida. I don't want them to capture you there. And thank you so much for being with us again today on State of Belief Radio.
It's an honor to do it, Weldon. Thanks so much for the invitation.
There's lots more still to come on this week's show. You'll hear about an encouraging new research-driven hope-giving project titled More in Common. And up next, America's only transgender nuclear-qualified Navy veteran, Rabbi, will be back with us for our regular series, Whosoever You Love. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. We first met Rabbi Rona Matlow last year when Donald Trump abruptly announced a ban on transgender service members. So this time, we had hoped to delve deeper into some of the issues that came up during our first conversation without the kind of headline-driven pressure that led to that first conversation, to talk about the challenges and the blessings of transgender identity, visibility, and relationships. But it was not to be. News leaked this week of the administration's plans to virtually erase transgender identity from American life. And so with unexpected urgency, I am grateful to welcome Rabbi Rona Matlow back to our program. Rona, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Reverend Gaddy. It's good to be back, although I wish it was under better circumstances,
yeah,
of course.
Me too. I start out wanting to hear your words about what has happened in this past week.
First, I'll go to what our founding fathers said, which is in the First Amendment, Congress shall neither establish nor prohibit the practice of any religion, which is, of course, the separation clause in the First Amendment. Trump has aligned himself with certain evangelical groups who are dictating how he establishes law in this country. And they are doing so with misguided interpretations of religious law. And in fact, they are saying, this is what Christianity says, but when you talk to Christian groups other than the evangelicals and the Roman Catholics, Presbyterians, but also the Episcopalians, the Lutherans, the Metropolitan Church of Christ, the Universal Church of Christ, the Universalist Unitarian Church, etc., all these other church groups are very open and welcoming of transgender and other queer people, as are most Jewish denominations outside of the Haredi and many Hasidic groups, because they all recognize that queer people, including transgender people, are living the lives as God intended us to live.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, last year I wrote a paper stating that it should essentially be considered an obligation for transgender Jews to transition gender because of the standpoint that transitioning gender is a life-saving act for us.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jewish religion, to save a life is considered an obligation that transcends every other obligation in Torah. And this paper was reviewed by an Orthodox rabbi who I work with in the community. And while he couldn't publicly endorse the paper, privately he told me that he thought it was a very well-written paper, and he agreed with what I wrote.
Hmm.
And when you have that kind of collegiality on this kind of thought, it's very clear that this is understood.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, where it says that God created the human, the Adam, male and female, and you look at the original Masoretic text, it shows very clearly that male and female, zachar unikeva in Hebrew, was written as a single textual unit. The original Adam had male and female characteristics both. The original Adam was androgynous or intersex. The original Adam was not a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that, we derive that God created humans with a broad, multidimensional spectrum of gender. God did not create a binary gender state in Genesis chapter 1.
What are you hearing from the people to whom you minister as a faith leader?
People in the trans community are in shock right now. Colleagues of mine have likened Trump's proclamation to the Nuremberg Laws of 1935. And we have very real fears right now that this is the beginning of the next Holocaust, except it's going to happen here in the United States. There may be some hyperbole, and certainly things could change on November 6th with the elections if we can flip the House. Because, of course, if Democrats take control of the House or the Senate, then Trump doesn't have the mandate that he has right now to run roughshod over the country. The problem is that he is isolating the United States from the rest of the world, and he is basically violating human rights with every proclamation. He has put tens of thousands of Latino youths in concentration camps, which is reminiscent of what we did with Japanese American citizens during World War II. During World War II, the United States turned away ship after ship of Jewish refugees that were sent back to Germany, put on trains to concentration camps to be murdered. And the tone of from Washington, D.C. right now is very much alike the tone of Washington, D.C. during that time period.
We have a lot of listeners who hunger for a way to stand for justice and dignity, specifically in solidarity with transgender persons right now, because that's the group that is suddenly in the crosshairs of a government that is supposed to represent all of us. So I would really appreciate you giving us some clear, specific direction on how to do the right thing in this situation when given the opportunity to do so in a work or a social or a church setting or whatever. Someone says they are transitioning. What should I understand? How can I be of service? How can others be of service?
That's a great question. The first thing is to welcome them into the fold. Do not chase them away. Ask questions. Try to learn and understand. If they don't have anybody available in their congregation who understands the process, they can reach out to experts at organizations like the National Center for Transgender Equality. They can refer the person to the Trans Lifeline for individual support. They can, of course, go to my website, rabarona.us, for resources. In many locations, there are Planned Parenthood clinics where people can get support. If they can't find a trans-friendly therapist in their area, they may be able to go to breakthrough.com and find a trans-friendly therapist online. Additionally, one thing that's absolutely vital right now is that our representatives and senators need to be flooded with letters from every congregation in the country opposing this action by the Trump administration, opposing these actions by Health and Human Services and by the Department of Education, redefining Title IX to state that gender is defined by birth sex. And that's just flat out scientifically wrong. The fact is that there are so many cases where birth sex does not define gender that it just proves their flat out scientific ignorance when they state that, aside from the question of transgender identity, that it's just foolish for them to do that.
What words or actions would you caution against?
Never misgender somebody. Don't presume to know who they are. be very careful about the language that you use.
Mm-hmm.
If you knew who they were before, be very cautious not to dead name them. In other words, use their previous name.
Mm-hmm.
If you knew this person growing up as Johnny, but they identify as Sarah now and use she, her pronouns, please be very careful to always call her Sarah and never refer to him as Johnny. It may be very tempting to use and very easy to slip and say him because the person is 6'2" and weighs 300 pounds. But if the person identifies as Sarah and uses she, her pronouns, please call her Sarah and refer to her with she, her pronouns.
What do you wish you as a transgender person had known at the beginning of your journey that you now know?
I wish that I had known my identity when I was younger, actually. In a lot of ways, not knowing and not transitioning until I was 55 made the transition easier. But I really do wish that I had been more aware of my gender identity when I was younger because the signs were there, but I never understood it. And what's really ironic is, as a high school teenager, I knew about transgender people like Renee Richards and Carolyn Cossey and Wendy Carlos, but I didn't realize that I was like them. But, you know, I used to cross-dress, and I used to remove body hair, and when I was very young, even like in first grade, I used to always hang out with the girls. But I never understood why I was like that. And it would have been nice to have that understanding. It would have been really wonderful to have lived the life of who I am instead of a miserable life of who I was. In my case, because I'm retired and because I have a very wonderful family, it was very easy for me. And because I'm on Medicare and I came out during the Barack Obama era, it was very easy for me to get transgender health care coverage. I didn't have any of the workplace issues that so many people have. I didn't lose my employment. I didn't lose my health care coverage. I didn't lose my family. I didn't lose my marriage. My wife has stayed by me. In a couple of weeks, we'll have been together for 35 years. You know, my life has been wonderful. But at the same time, you know, I'm suffering from very severe military injuries. And that's a dichotomy. Being permanently disabled with these injuries has made my life very miserable. But at the same time, it facilitated a very easy transition. So it's kind of a strange split.
There are challenges to every relationship, but there are particularly potential complications in romantic relationships. What do you wish all people understood about those kinds of connections?
Well, sure. My wife did not sign up to be a lesbian. She is heterosexual. And this is a challenge that every transgender person who is married goes through along with their partner if they decide that they stay married. Because now all of a sudden, the cisgender partner finds themselves in a homosexual relationship, which is a very strange situation for them to be in. And, you know, before gender surgery happens, the body parts are still the same, and so sexual function may be the same. But after the person has gender-confirming surgery, of course, sexual function is very different. All of this has to be negotiated, and communication is the key skill. Some couples move to an open relationship where, you know, if the wife of a transgender woman still needs to have sex with a male, she may take a male lover. It just depends.
Yeah.
Various different accommodations are worked out.
We don't have any idea, of course, about what the next several weeks or several months will hold. But I want you, if you will, to talk to our listeners about whatever else comes to your mind as you look at what may be a challenge during these weeks and what's most important for people to keep in mind if we go into a very difficult situation.
Okay, sure. Well, I have several bits of wisdom. Number one is vote. Most places have gone to mail-in ballots. Please get your ballots filled out and mailed in well before the November 6th deadline so that your ballots get into your county registrar in time to be properly counted so that they don't become provisional ballots or filed away in the circular file or whatever, because your vote needs to count. So please, please, please vote. Make your vote count. Be thoughtful, especially about the national candidates, your governors, your state legislators. Those are the types of people who have broad impact on your life. So do that. If you are afraid of what is coming down the pike, please do not decide to go out and buy a handgun. While I don't necessarily take a stand one way or the other on Second Amendment gun ownership issues, I tell people that unless you have been through a specific combat training course, having a gun is a liability, because if you go up against somebody and you have a gun and don't have combat training, that gun is going to be taken from you and it becomes a liability instead of a self-defense weapon. And then you are dead from your weapon. Mm-hmm. If you want to have something less lethal, like a stun gun or an ASP or something like that, if those are legal in your jurisdiction and your police department licenses those, that's fine. But do not get guns right now. I think mm-hmm. that's just a very bad idea. Protests are great, but the biggest thing is let your senators, let your representatives know how you feel about what's going on in Washington. And when there are protests, whether in Washington or whether they are at your local capitals, please attend those. Many religious groups are, in fact, planning actions and carrying out actions regarding these issues right now. The rub is that small groups of evangelicals have the ear of President Trump, and President Trump, of course, has the control of the Pentagon, and so that's what makes him so dangerous. And so we have to do whatever we can to try to influence the Capitol to keep the president under control, because, of course, we cannot influence the Supreme Court, and we cannot influence the president. So we have to control Congress, and the only way we can do that, of course, is by affecting what happens at the ballot box on Tuesday, November 6th.
Rabba Rona Matlow is America's only transgender nuclear-qualified Navy veteran rabbi. You can follow her work at rabbarona.us. Rona, thank you so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio, and we'll look forward to the next time that we can have a conversation.
Thank you, Reverend Getty. Have a wonderful day.
This conversation is a part of Whosoever You Love, our semi-monthly series affirming the worth and full value of LGBTQ persons within and beyond religion, supported by the Arcus Foundation, dedicated to the idea that people can live in harmony with one another and the natural world. Learn more about Arcus and its partners at arcusfoundation.org and find additional resources on Whosoever You Love at stateofbelief.com. The national media not only highlights all the ways in which we seem to be divided right now, it also actively deepens many of those divides by amplifying the voices that seem most committed to dividing us further. Thankfully, there are growing efforts to counter this narrative. For groups like Nuns on the Bus, the motivation is both religious and patriotic. For others, it may be something else. Either way, there's plenty of reasons for hope. Joining me now is Stephen Hawkins, Research Director and Senior Associate with More in Common USA. Stephen, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Let's just start with a brief introduction to what More in Common is all about.
So about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago now, there was an assassination of a member of parliament in the UK, a woman named Jo Cox, who is a member of parliament, who is a vocal supporter of helping migrants and refugees, especially from Syria, was assassinated. She was killed by one of her constituents when she was leaving her office. Hmm. It was a real moment for the British public because this was the first assassination in many, many, many years. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that the assassination was motivated by an opposition to her belief that Britain should have people arriving who were not British, who were from different countries and who were fleeing from danger and from war. And it led to an outpouring of public support. And from there grew the organization now called More in Common, which has been studying problems of polarization and division in societies in Europe and now in the United States by doing public opinion research. And we just completed our study in the United States. It took us almost a year to do from start to finish, and it included an 8,000-person survey, and then we conducted a large number of focus groups and in-depth interviews as well to try and explore what's going on in our country, why we feel so divided, who is on what side, what are some of the problems, and what are some of the solutions.
Give us a little bit of understanding of what you found in the United States.
We asked questions that were about all the political issues of the day, from immigration to sexual harassment to police brutality, questions about transgender identity, all of the subjects that are regularly in the newspaper. But we wanted to understand if there was something deeper and more fundamental about who people are than just whether they vote Democrat or Republican or, you know, how they think about these particular issues. So we asked a lot of questions about people's psychology and their values, some questions that really underlie their ideology. And so we asked questions about people's parenting styles, a lot of questions that are more about your core beliefs. And that's the term that we use, their core beliefs. And then we ask people about their political engagement, too. So how often are they voting in local elections, posting about political things on social media? How often are they participating in political meetings and so on? And then we look for the patterns. We worked with a statistician who ran a complex process that's called cluster analysis, which looks for patterns in those data. And what we found were 7 different groups of Americans. From left to right, they are the progressive activists, the traditional liberals, the passive liberals, the politically disengaged, the moderates, the traditional conservatives, and the devoted conservatives. And what those groupings are groups not of people, not based on their political party identification, not based on their demographics, but based on their core beliefs and their political participation. And so we built profiles of these 7 different groups. And one of the key findings was that we think that about 2/3 of Americans, and these would be members of the four of the groups in the middle, belong to what we call the exhausted majority, 2 in 3 Americans who feel that their voices aren't reflected in the media, who feel that they are deeply fatigued and tired by our political situation as it is, who are more flexible in their thinking. They don't only think along the left or think along the right, but they have a different opinion depending on the situation. And they're more open to compromise. They want their side to listen and to work together with others. They don't just want their side to stand and fight.
Well, I'm curious as to what kind of commonalities did you find in that research?
We asked questions about public discourse, and by that I mean the way we're talking to each other in this country, especially in the political arena, but that can be also just in the way that we talk to our friends, to our family, to our coworkers online about politics. And we found that most Americans, 8 out of 10, think that there is a problem of hate speech in our country. So that's something we have in common. But we also found that 8 out of 10 Americans think that political correctness is a problem in our country. And too often, we think it's painted that either you think that there's a problem, that there is hate speech in our country and we need to be less critical and we need to be kinder, or you think that there's a problem of people being too sensitive and that there's too many rules about what can be said and what can't be said, and that's political correctness. But actually, we found that most Americans believe that both are true at the same time. And that was a trend that we found with a lot of issues, where there was actually a lot of common ground in the middle in ways that doesn't quite benefit the left or the right, but is more a matter of nuance. Americans want a border that's secure. Americans also want an immigration policy that is humane and that allows people who came here as children to find a pathway to being a legal citizen in this country. That's not the Democrats' position. That's not the Republicans' position. It's something that kind of draws from a little bit of both sides. And that was a pattern that we saw in a lot of cases, especially, you know, one of the ways in which we saw it was the following. There's broad recognition of a problem, for instance, broad recognition that racism is still a problem in this country, that sexism is still a problem in this country, but not a broad recognition of what the solutions are to those problems. And so that's why we think there needs to be better discourse in our country, because we actually have a common starting point on a lot of these key issues. We just need to be able to talk about them at this at this critical moment.
What are the ways you're planning to use this data to help amplify messages of unity at a time of such division?
That's a really good question. I think we're still figuring that out. We have been very fortunate to receive quite a lot of attention from the media. Our study has been written up in the Washington Post and the New York Times, on the right as well, Daily Wire, with the National Review, Financial Times. So we've gotten a lot of coverage now, and I think that part of the work will be working with partners who are disconnected from politics, who are in a cultural space or in the private sector, but who have an audience and have influence, to try and work with them. And I think the other part that we're very hopeful about is that other organizations not connected to us, not through any direct relationship with us, will also read this report, see the need for seeking common ground, see the need for healing in a moment of division in our country, and will pursue that independently of us. And so I think there's a direct way in which we are trying to help bring about change, but we're a small organization, so we're also hoping that indirectly other organizations will take this on.
So what can you tell us about the future of our nation, and in fact, other parts of the globe as well, from what you've seen so far?
Well, that's an ambitious question. I'll say this. The commonality between the places in Europe where we've done these studies and the United States is that there is a big divide between a cosmopolitan, urban, young, educated elite. In the United States, that's a group that we refer to as the progressive activists, who are largely secular. Faith is not a big part of their lives. Most of them will say they never pray. Religion's not very important to them. They don't identify as religious. And between more conservative, traditional people, for whom their Catholic faith or their Protestant faith or some other faith is an important part of how they approach life, how they approach morality, and also a conservative and more traditional worldview that emphasizes national identity, people who really think that they are French and that matters, that they're American and that matters. The more cosmopolitan younger generation is far more global. They are not especially attached to America or attached to Germany. They have an identity which is more international and about their beliefs and about their worldview. It's not so much about being from one country or the other. And so that's a big tension that we're seeing that is playing out in the Brexit vote in the UK, in the recent French elections where the nationalist Marine Le Pen's National Front Party almost won. It's a tension in Germany where the alternative for Deutschland AfD party, which was an obscure, irrelevant party with no power, is now on the ascent, and all of the center and center-left parties are on the decline. That's the trend that we're seeing. An old guard of people who care about their religion, who care about their national identity, who think their culture matters and needs to be protected and that their way of life is important, and people who have a global identity, who are younger, more educated, and think that all of that stuff is a little bit backward. Mm. And that's a hard conversation that needs to be had, and that's what we're seeing.
How can our listeners get involved in this work? How would they find you?
Well, you can go to our website, first of all, to read about the report. The website is hiddentribes.us, hiddentribes.us. You can take our quiz. It's a slightly shortened version of the study, so it's not 100% accurate, but it's a really useful instrument. You can see where you land on our 7-segment spectrum and learn about all the other different tribes. And then what I would encourage your listeners to do is to try and understand that there are different cultures and perspectives in this country that aren't all evil and all bad, and that there are people who are just coming from a different perspective that need to be heard, that mean very well. Trying to have some of those hard conversations and trying to give people a chance who you otherwise might write off as not having the best intentions.
Stephen Hawkins is Research Director and Senior Associate with More in Common USA. Thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Before we go, my friends, it is an understatement for me to say to you that we're in a disturbing and dangerous time in our nation. Fear intermingled with anger is a toxic mix. Political bias fueled by emotional extremism has emerged in our nation as domestic terrorism, the goal of which is death. The bombs that have shown up in the mailboxes of Democratic leaders carry a singular message. We hate you and want you dead. Sadly, we don't have a president who can speak to the country as every other president has spoken in a helpful way. On Wednesday, after reading what someone wrote for him to say, the president called for unity. His voice was hollow. After reading a much-needed message meant to calm the emotions of Americans, the president exposed his real feelings as he laughed while making fun of his staff's efforts to help him be presidential. As soon as he finished reading aloud the words obviously prepared by someone else, the president showed everybody the thoughts and feelings that were driving his words and emotions amid a crisis in our nation. We long ago learned that Donald Trump has no empathy and no ability to calm the nation. He thrives on division. Think about it. What if the bombs had exploded as intended? Think of where we'd be today. Two former presidents would be dead. the people who the president has rhetorically condemned would be dead. But the message of the president on Thursday morning was another attack on the media. The media he blames for the hate that's pulsating through thousands of people in this nation. Does this president never look into a mirror or listen to his dangerous words? As you listen to State of Belief today, please resolve to not let the anger and divisiveness commended and demonstrated by President Trump be a model for your response to what's going on in our nation. Now, I know that will take discipline for all of us, but it is a necessity. Friends, be careful. Look at what is around you. Stay as calm as possible. I am sure all of us are frustrated while asking what we can do that will be helpful. Try not to buy into a response to mental sickness, meanness, and destructive rhetoric and behavior that worsen what is happening in our nation. The midterm elections are now only days away. You can do something about the results that will be reported on Election Day. Vote. Vote. Vote for candidates that will change the direction of our nation, speak the truth, and make our democracy strong again. Vote. And encourage your neighbors, your friends, your colleagues to vote. Friends, at this moment, with fear, disbelief, disappointment, and a mixture of feelings surging through our souls, keep in mind that the best and most important action we can take immediately, the best way we can affect change in our nation, is by voting. Vote. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you think there's value in the conversations we present and the voices that we amplify in the midst of the gridlock our public rhetoric too often becomes, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.